Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP Section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guests.
Thanks very much, Sarah. And thanks to the AICPA for inviting us today to talk about retainer fees and financial planning practices. My name is Chip Simon, and I'm a fee-only financial advisor located in Poughkeepsie, New York. And I'm joined by two of my colleagues, Ed Fulbright, who's a CPA PFS located in Durham, North Carolina. Ed, how are you today?
Doing great. Glad to be here with you, Chip.
Great. Glad to have you join us. And also, Sheila Padden, CPA, is joining us from Chicago, Illinois, where she runs Padden Financial Planning. Sheila, how are you today?
Hi, Chip. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Good. Well, I'm glad that we're all here together. I think for the audience, let me first of all give us a little, provide them a little overview about our practices. Now, I am I'll confess up front, I'm a certified financial planner with my master's in accounting, but I am not a CPA. Don't hold that against me, although I am married to a retired CPA. And I'm the co-owner of a fee-only financial firm called Taconic Advisors in Poughkeepsie, New York. We have two partners, we have two professional staff, and the equivalent of one full-time administrative person. And we handle about 110 clients on the retainer model on an annual basis. Ed, down there in North Carolina, tell us a little bit about your practice and how that's structured for retainers.
Sure. We have about a staff of about five people. We have two firms, and both all the employees work for each of the firms. But there's one advisor. There's some people that assist me on the financial planning side. We have Fulbright Financial Consulting, which is the financial advisory investment advisory firm. Then we also have what I call the traditional CPA firm that handles the taxes, the accounting, the business advisory type work. And so we end up splitting the work. Roughly, it's about 60% on the financial advisory side and then about 40% on the CPA side.
On the CPA side. And then within that financial advisory side, you use both, you have retainers, but you do some people on an hourly basis and also have some assets under management or AUM fees as well.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah. Primarily, the reason why we do that is that we like giving our clients choices. When we first started out, we didn't have many clients that were millionaires. And as we grew, our clients fortunately became millionaires. And we like working with people as they're starting out and helping them to start to build their wealth and to acquire more wealth. That's more importantly.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, good. Well, thank you. And Sheila, how about a little overview of your practice there in Chicago?
I'm a sole practitioner, and I have two virtual assistants. I have 30 open retainer clients, and I work with about 10 to 15 clients on an hourly agreement. And they, of course, vary from year to year. The open retainer clients are, you know, consistent year in, year out. Almost everyone renews. And then two virtual assistants who help, one with tax and the other one with more general financial planning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, good. And I mentioned my own. And for the audience's benefit, maybe I should fill them in and give some context about, you know, why are we here talking about this today? What gives us the ability to do that? And to add that context, we are all members of an organization called the Alliance of Comprehensive Planners, or ACP, located at acplanners.org. And we're a professional community of tax-focused financial planners that all operate under the retainer model. And we've probably got, I think it's about 169 advisors in over 30 states, and half of us are very focused on the tax aspects of financial planning, that is either a CPA or a CPA PFS like Ed or enrolled agents. So taxes are really in the very heart of our financial planning model. And so some of the listeners, the CPAs, PFSs, and people in different practice scenarios might have different goals for which they might consider whether this retainer model applies to them. And so, for example, you might be giving incidental advice and are tired of it and would like to get paid for the advice that you're giving away for free now, or maybe you're trying to smooth out the annual workload or add wealth management as a component to your practice, or expanding your broader into broader financial advisory options. Sometimes it could be wanting to end the tax season treadmill, or maybe even just entering into a second career. But it's this retainer model that we're really used to using. It's kind of the heart and soul of the approach that we have with our clients. And so we wanted to share and talk about some of the aspects of this retainer model. So I guess I'll just start off with the conversation by first of all saying, what is the retainer? In very simple terms, I define it for the audience as being it's a contractual price for services that is paid periodically. And sometimes you might you think about the attorney model. They take some money and charge against that retainer amount hourly billing, or there might be an all-in price package, which is what Sheila, Ed, and myself are familiar with this ACP model. But there are some different implications of the model, and I think we break that down into the idea of revenue. We'd like to talk about that and the relationship with the clients, and also the retention experiences that we've had with clients. So let me just kind of get that started by, Ed, let me ask you, in your experience, what would you want our listeners to know about the revenue aspects of using the retainer model for your financial advisory practice?
Well, I found the retainer model to be very natural for me, because one of the things when I first started out, and I've been doing this for a while, that I started out in 97, 98, talking to clients about getting them to let me manage their money. And the big issue is that they were like, Ed, how can you do that? And when I started to present the retainer, it was a more all-encompassing type of situation. My clients felt very comfortable with my decision-making ability and advising ability. So the retainer focuses on that, and then we come up with a strategy overall that is coordinated with their other financial goals so that it can help them to build their wealth and continue their wealth. And the big thing that I was running into is that now the retainer system built upon my strengths and made my clients feel more comfortable. And it also helped me to be able to upgrade my clients from just a tax return to a more encompassing service that might end up bringing the firm an extra, well, quite a few thousand dollars more than a tax return.
Yeah, exactly. A big expansion of the practice. And you know, I have to interject. I think one thing I think that is really that CPAs are really able to do is talk to their clients about money and all aspects of money. And I don't, you know, I think there are some financial advisors, I think they're just, you know, like just just pure investments. It's very narrow as opposed to comprehensive.
Yes.
They don't necessarily have that full skill set. And I think CPAs have that to a T. And if they can expand it and not give away the advice for free, you know, and expand their practices using this sort of relationship-based model, I think they're in a great position to take advantage of it as a practice transition, personally. That's what I've witnessed from talking and working with CPAs in the past.
One of the things that I noticed, and the whole reason why I got into this business, is that I was working with my clients, and they were paying me on an hourly rate type of situation. We were going into the investment advisor, and I was having to explain to them what my client wanted.
Yeah.
And I was continuing to have to repeat the same statements over and over to them again, as if the people who were making the largest chunk of money wasn't getting it. They were trying to sell a product or trying to push something that I felt wasn't needed, and I would have to end up telling them so, trying to protect my clients. So when I found the ACP system, that was like, wow, that changed my point of view, because it took a lot of things that I was already doing and then putting me in this, or my firm in the driver's seat, versus it being a situation where I was going to an outside firm and I was dependent upon them to do the right thing.
No, very understood. So Sheila, how about you? What's your experience, and what advice or comments do you have about practice revenue and your revenue using the retainer model?
Well, what I like about the retainer model is that it provides consistent and stable revenue for me, and that clients really enjoy knowing what they're paying. So it's a flat fee. So it seems like it's a win-win for both of us. From a billing perspective, it's simple. There's no detailed billing, and it's a time saver. And for clients, it's just really easy for them. They know what they pay quarterly, and they just set it up and send it to me. So it's just really a simple system, and I think that clients really like to know what they're going to pay for the year. And for me, the other part of it is it's an all-in approach. So I'm all in with every single client. I don't have to track my time. I don't have to worry about overcharging. I do what is necessary and appropriate. And I think it just helps really foster a strong relationship over the long run.
Yeah. I can certainly agree with that. And I think that, again, it's my experience that when clients are, say, with an hourly billing system, very often their eye is on the clock rather than having their eye on the planning problem. And I found that with the retainer, you know, basically when you present the retainer, when it's accepted, when you kind of sell that, you never have to sell again, because it's all taken care of. Now we can just work on moving forward with client goals and solving client problems. Is that the sort of experience, like Ed, is that the same experience you have working with your clients?
Yes, that's part of it. The big thing that I love about the retainer is that if I figure out something, or if I think something will be of benefit to a client, I can go ahead and kind of experiment with the numbers and try to figure out, will this really be of benefit, without having to ask the client for permission as if I was on an hourly basis.
Yeah, that's true, right? Because then you have to sell that next thing you want to do, right?
Right. And if it doesn't turn out, I don't have a conversation with the client. But if it does, then I already have the facts. I can bring it to the client. I haven't lost any money, and I already know what I'm getting paid. My client thinks I'm a hero. Because, you know, I'll give you one example where one client was a little bit too young for a defined benefit plan, but they had read about it in the newspaper, and they said, Ed, this sounds like a great thing that I can get a bigger tax deduction. And I said, yes, but you're not quite old enough yet. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about it. We went ahead and did it. And then when she got to the proper age, I called her up and said, hey, look, you know that defined benefit plan you talked about? I think you're ready for it now. And that's what we did. We went ahead and implemented it. And she's been doing incredibly well. Now, that's kind of unusual where you get a client that can do more than $40,000 or $50,000 into their retirement account. But sometimes you get clients that are able to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and going back, I wanted to mention something that that Sheila brought up too, on the business consistency. You know, during the downturn, 2000, 2007, 2008, my revenue didn't go down at all. I mean, the retainer that we use is not necessarily based on assets under management. And some of the assets under management, actually fee-only firms, I remember, had to let a lot of people go because the revenue really suffered then. I mean, you know, the market declined like, you know, what was it, 38, 42%.
Yes.
So if you're, you know, if your billings are based on that, but I nothing like that happened in my practice. The stability was there. And then just ready to help the clients through that tough point. And actually didn't really get very many calls. Kind of interesting. But anyway, the point is the practice, the consistency of revenue for the practice was a real important point, I thought.
I probably need to come up to your office and take some notes because I heard from almost all my clients. And I was able to basically tell them things that we had discussed before, but help relieve them in a time of panic. In fact, it led to me picking up more clients because they felt more comfortable with the ideas or the concepts that we had discussed, like the bond ladder. Yeah. When we talked about the bond ladder, and I could tell them, I says, well, how long do you think this condition's going to exist? Do you think it'll be 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 5 years, or 10 years? And they said, well, I'm not sure. I think 5 years will be a little bit better. And I said, well, guess what? You have a bond ladder that will last for 10 years before we need to replenish it. And they were like, oh, well, why did I call you? Well, you called me because you were concerned. And that's part of my job. Yeah. You know, that we have conversations, we talk about potential problems, and even before, what is the nice thing is sometimes you can have a conversation about a problem before it becomes a big problem, and you can address it.
Yeah, exactly. So now on the other side of the coin, are there issues or are there problems that you've had to deal with either in getting the retainer going in your practice or practice area, or transitioning clients onto the retainer model at all? Sheila, do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I didn't have a tax practice to begin with where I was billing by the hour, but I can tell you that I'm sort of a sheepish hourly biller where, I second guess whether I can pass things along to the client. Did I do extra research for the benefit of them or me? You know, and I just feel like it's so freeing not to have to worry about all that. You know, I just do what's right and just keep going. And I think that clients feel it and appreciate it. And, you know, I feel like I'm not bogged down with having to worry about how many hours I'm charging. And I think over time, what I've learned is that some years you put in a lot more time with certain clients than others, but over the long run, it all works out.
You know, I think I've noticed that sort of averaging myself. Sometimes I've told clients, you know, a big event comes along, maybe there's a loss of a relative or of a spouse, you know, this is what you're paying me for over these years, because it's been cut, but now there's a really big problem we have to get our arms around. So that is one thing. And I'd also like to just mention too that although the retainer is kind of sort of defines the relationship, you still have to price it right. That is, you know, if your retainer prices are really low and you have a lot of work involved, if you didn't price it correctly, that's going to, you know, you're going to suffer because of that. So pricing, retainer does not necessarily mean pricing. You price things, and then you have to. Then the retainer is the model which you can roll out your pricing. I want to, you know, point that out to the audience as well. Ed, how about you? Did you try to transition tax clients? Did that go for you? Do you have any other sort of obstacles you ran into, or comments about maybe downsides or problems with getting the retainer going?
Yeah. Well, the first thing was getting clients to feel comfortable that I could do the job. Yeah. And the first couple of years, it was maybe slow going. But as I went along, and also introducing this to new clients, like old clients accept you at a certain place. And then as I educated them, talked to them about situations, they would actually, my current clients would refer people that they knew that came into some money or were about to retire, and they were looking for opportunities to work with someone that would be looking out for their best interest. But it was an education process. And then after doing it for quite a few years, it became simpler and simpler, and now almost second nature.
Yeah. Nice. Very nice. Yeah, I think, good. That's an excellent point. So let's move along, and we've let's go into the next category of discussion, the second R, as it were, and we've kind of touched on some of these things as well, but let's restate and go over it. The relationship aspect of the retainer. Sheila talked about feeling very very open and free about that. There are things that she feels she doesn't have to worry about in the relationship. Ed, anything that comes to mind as far as the relationship issues or things that you really value about the retainer-based relationship with clients?
Well, first of all, I think with all of our clients, we have a relatively deep relationship that we know their family members, we know them, we know their liking or understanding, maybe deeper than any other advisor that they may have had. The other thing is that sometimes, and this is maybe a con about having such a deep relationship, we refer to the retainer as an open retainer. And some clients like to challenge us on how often can they meet, especially if they're retired.
Yeah. They got time, don't they?
Yeah, they got time. You have to kind of educate them. It is open if you have real problems, but you're coming up with what-if scenarios that aren't ever going to happen. So, you know, we need to kind of rail this in, you know, corral this so that we can have a better relationship.
Yeah, I got you. So that's kind of funny. Sheila, is there any other thoughts you had on the relationship aspects that are real pros in your mind?
Well, you know, I think that with an open retainer, it feels like you're on the same side as your client. There isn't any sort of built-in conflicted with do I charge or not charge? Are they expecting this fee or not? So I think it puts us on the same side as the client. And then I guess just to give you an example of how close my relationship is with many of my clients, I have a client that about a year and a half ago had a significant event in so much as the husband died suddenly.
And
all I can say is that 2 hours afterwards, the son called me and wanted me to know. So it was an immediate call, and that just spoke volumes as to, you know, how important our relationship was. So I do feel like it's just a privileged spot that we put ourselves in when we're working with an open retainer and doing this type of work.
You know, that's a good point, Sheila, because you're just reminding me that sometimes I find out about the parental illnesses before the kids do sometimes. And so it's really, you know, having a really primary point in that relationship, I completely agree with. Do you experience that as well, Ed?
Yes. Sometimes, you know, it's very soothing to the family when we can kind of show them what the estate plan documents were, you know, the love that may have gone into them, and just kind of educating the family what the parents may have felt or the loved one, how they prepared for this unfortunate time period.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing I thought about in getting ready for today was one thing that I personally like, and this has to do with the planner's objective, that is our lives, is that I really like the control of my time within the retainer. You know, tax preparation is very compliance and deadline driven. I mean, there's a date and getting that stuff out. And, you know, very often you have kind of grumpy clients because, you know, they have to do this thing called tax preparation and tax reporting. But the clients that we work with, that I work with, are both there with common goals and interests wanting to move forward. But in the way that we deliver our planning, which is in a modular fashion for the listening audience, there's a very seasonal aspect to the flow. And so clients are kind of used to the annual calendar, but we can also, I can carve out my personal time. As you probably know, I tend to travel, take a month off in the spring, usually after tax season, of course, and go with my wife to Europe for a month and really can carve out some real personal time for some personal goals. So there's a lot of satisfaction with having a lot of control over how we actually deliver the annual flow of responsibilities to our clients. Do the two of you agree with that or use that, or are there other things that are really good about your personal life that you like about using a retainer?
I find the retainer very useful and able to kind of control what's going on in my life a little bit more than I think other people have. And I also try to get clients to focus on building their net worth versus their rate of return.
Sheila, anything to comment about that?
Well, there's definitely a seasonality to our work, you know, sort of the ebb and the flow, but, you know, I certainly don't have the intense tax season where most of the work is really clustered in one part of the year like so many people would have.
Yeah.
But there is a rhyme and reason to the flow of the year, and it all makes sense. I know, Chip, you're talking about the modular approach, and I think that works really well. And then there's just, you know, logical time of the year when you approach certain topics and other times of the year when you address different topics.
Yeah, exactly. Let me see, other things like how about in the client relationship, are there certain things that are easier for you to delegate, or do you position yourself as a quarterback? How do you continue to show value? Do any of those kind of issues come up when you're working with your clients under the retainer?
Yeah, so I would consider myself, and I think my clients would too, as the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think they appreciate that I'm, you know, sort of orchestrating things, but I'm also with them side by side, step by step, you know, as they're going through their lives, you know, knowing, you know, all kinds of things about them, which gives them a lot of comfort. They can feel safe that they've got, you know, this trusted professional at their side. So I guess the way I've looked at it is, you know, a lot of people, you know, work with like a coach, you know, like a fitness coach.
Yeah.
You know, they're side by side with this coach. And so, you know, that's kind of the relationship I have with in that open retainer relationship.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so how about the third R when it comes to client retention? And so not just the relationship, but the extent and the longevity of the relationships. Ed, what's your experience been since you started using the retainer model in your practice?
Well, the retainer model has been lasting. The relationships last for a long period of time. Typically, you know, I have quite a few clients that started out with me as a planner at probably over 20 years, because they converted from being a tax client to being a planning and tax client, and we've enhanced the relationship. I've been so fortunate that when my clients move away from Durham, they still retain us to do all their taxes, all their investments, to be their trusted advisor, and I find that very, very rewarding.
Yeah.
If I had to come up with a percentage, it would probably be close to maybe 95%, and probably for the people who it doesn't work out are people who don't like to be given advice. They believe that they are the know-it-alls or they're the do-it-yourselfers.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So, and what is it that, oh, so it's the people that aren't the know-it-alls, maybe they're a little bit more, say, anxious.
Yes.
That taking care of that emotional need that they have is really a lot of what you're delivering as far as value to them yourself.
Right. The other thing that I've come to the realization that a lot of spouses are trying to make sure they have somebody on the team that would take care of the less dominant financial, the spouse, so make sure they have a trusted person to work with the spouse to help them make the right decisions if something ever happens to the financially dominant spouse.
You know, I didn't think about that in advance, Ed, but I have noticed that a lot with my couples. You know, they are there in front of me for the survivor, and that's what in general terms that's what he's thinking about, because in general terms, he's probably a little more financially savvy than she is. But I think that's an excellent point. The couple's there for the last one standing.
Well, Chip, don't be sexist about it, because sometimes the wife is the financially dominant one.
Well, sometimes she's not the financially dominant one, but she's still right.
you've been married for a long time. I've been married for a long time, and we all know that that's true. But sometimes the wife lets us pretend that we're really in charge.
What can I say? So Sheila, and Sheila, in your experience, how is it retention? What's that like in your practice? What's the feeling you get from that using the retainer?
Yeah, so almost everyone renews every year. You know, I would say out of 30 clients, I have maybe one a year. I mean, two would be a lot who might not renew.
Yeah.
And my goal is basically to have clients for life.
Yeah.
And I think with this all-in approach, you know, fostered through an open retainer relationship, that it just creates strong bonds from the very beginning and creates a trust that's very deep. And so I think clients stick with you.
Yeah. And I can corroborate that, Sheila, because I do tell people now after 17 years, I still have my second client because the first one passed away, because that's how long the relationships tend to persist. But here's the conundrum, and I'm really interested in your comments about this for the audience. So here's the good news. Clients really stay under the retainer model as we practice it. So the good news is they stay, but the bad news can be they stay. What do you do about business capacity as they're growing? Because what I remember is we worked for years, all you keep thinking about is filling up your practice. And I sat there and said to myself when the practice was filled, you know, no one ever told me that when you fill up your practice, they keep coming. What do you do about that kind of capacity thing? Ed, any thoughts about that? What that's been like for you?
Well, it's also a thought of how do you build your practice to transition beyond your work life or whatever time that you plan to be there.
Yeah.
And that's why we're always developing staff, and we'll add an extra member to, you know, occasionally staff leave. But we try to, you know, add additional members so that they will help us to continue to build our capacity. And I guess it's by us adding our staff that we're able to continue to add additional people.
Yeah, so it's the problem of business leverage and technology and people,
right,
and diversifying jobs and things like that. So
And then a lot of times the clients need work, but they don't need as much work as they do the first year. And that helps with also the capacity, that you're able to maybe take on more if your clients are in the second or third or fourth year versus if they're all in the first year.
Yeah. So after a building year or setup year, then it's kind of a more maintenance mode for the ensuing years. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So. And Sheila, how about you with any sort of things you've bumped into as far as with retention problems with clients, or is there a certain level that you're seeking? I'm not sure what full practice necessarily means for you, for example. Is it more than one practice or?
Yeah, so I definitely agree with you and with Ed that the first year is the most time intensive,
yeah,
and then the second year not so much, and by third year it's more of an ongoing, so then it's easier to onboard more new clients when you've got more seasoned clients in the pipeline. The way I've dealt with continual growth is by having virtual assistants. And so the way I've added virtual assistants is I try to zero in on things that maybe I don't enjoy doing as much as others, and then I get help with that. And then I try to have a virtual assistant who really loves that aspect of our work so that each of us is doing what we love to do the most. And so, you know, hopefully that's creating a really happy, effective team.
Yeah, excellent. So, well, okay. Well, thank you very, very much. I think here's a challenge for you. So, if you had to give one word of thought about the thing that you really love about having a retainer-based practice, what would that word or thought be? Does something really come to mind very, very quickly, real top of mind, Sheila, for you?
Freedom. That was the word that just popped right in. Definitely, I feel free to run my business the way I'd like to run it, be the type of advisor I want to be for clients, and be with them the way I really think is the best way, and truly be a fiduciary for my clients.
Yeah, okay. Ed, how about you?
I would think holistic. And the reason why I came up with that word, because, well, the freedom part I agree with 1,000%, but I also, I think because we are helping our clients with so much of their life, it gives us great value, or at least gives me great pride of advising clients on the different situations that they may be running into.
Yeah, I got you. And I guess if I had to think, I think about the word trust, because I just
yes.
Really, I just love that close relationship with the clients and being in that position of trust. I would be destroyed if I thought that I was ever, going back on my word or trust with a client. It would just really affect me so deeply, and because that's such an important part of me wanting to try to do good in my life, and I find that this has been a real way for me to do good in my life as I wanted to do. So thank you both, Ed Fulbright and Sheila Padden. I just wanted to say as we're wrapping up here that, our group of ACP, the Alliance of Comprehensive Planners, has been working with the retainer model for over 30 years, and if any listeners are interested in finding out more about it, they can go to acplanners.org. And there is a white paper on the website called The Financial Planner's Retainer, A Reflection of Real Value. So if you wanted to do a deep dive of that, or I'm sure if you ever had questions of our membership, either the three of us or members about our experience with the retainer-based model and how that's been in our professional lives, we're real open, very tight-knit organization. We'd be happy to share those feelings and thoughts with you. So on behalf of the PFP section, this has been Chip Simon in Poughkeepsie, New York. If you enjoyed this podcast, I highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website and access more about financial planning and tax advisory services under the retainer model. Stay tuned, please, for Sarah Bradley, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit aicpa.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered, and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.